Because I remember getting back there and we were all discussing this and the possibility of us going because we're intelligence is still there. And it was quite frightening to me because I thought I'd never have really considered the fact that I could end up having to shoot people. Thankfully, our field station was considered essential to the war support because of the communications that were going through there. You got to remember, this was 1990, right? The wall had fallen, but Russia, Soviet Union at that time, was still trying in vain, I think, to try to survive. But we couldn't let down our guard at that point because it didn't really crumble until 91. So yeah, there was still a Cold War going on while this other war is going on.
Veterans Voices, The First Gulf War, is produced by AMPRS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, and is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
The Dakota brings you Asleep at the Wheel, live and on stage, Sunday, May 11th. Asleep at the Wheel has been up, down, and all around, bringing their signature brand of country and western swing to the world since 1970. Touring with their latest release, Half a Hundred Years, it's a 50th anniversary celebration of song and friends that have made them a monument of the American music landscape. The lineup has changed over the years, but Asleep at the Wheel just keeps on rolling along. Tickets for Asleep at the Wheel can be found at the Dakota website. Visit dakotacooks.com for more details.
You are listening to North Star Stories, Voices from Where We Live, a daily newscast about what it means to live in Minnesota.
Coming up, voters in northern Minnesota are back at the polling stations. Communities around the state upset about a retailer's DEI decision respond by showing the power of the purse. And a warning about consuming fish from some Minnesota waters. I'm Chantel Sings. Voters in northern Minnesota will decide tomorrow who will fill disgraced Senator Justin Eichhorn's vacant seat. Eichhorn, a Republican from Grand Rapids, resigned in March after being arrested in a prostitution sting in Bloomington. He pleaded not guilty last week in a federal arraignment hearing. Republican Carrie Heintzman, a business owner from Nisswa, and Democrat Denise Slipey, an environmental health professional from Breezy Point, are competing for the position. Heintzman won her party's primary. The winner will serve the remainder of Eichhorn's term. The next regular election is scheduled for 2026. Coming up, Target built trust in business by pledging support for racial equity. But when the company walked back those commitments earlier this year, some Minnesotans decided it was time to walk away. Reporter Zan Holston has more.
When Target announced in January it was ending its diversity, equity, and inclusion policies, some local activists said it felt like a slap in the face. Comedian and radio host Shaletta Brundage put it this way.
We all old enough now to be able to look back and say we've been in a situation where somebody told us they love us, but they really didn't. And Target has shown us that they really didn't love us like they said they did.
After the murder of George Floyd in 2020, Target positioned itself as a corporate leader in racial equity. It pledged $10 million to social justice initiatives and committed to spending more than $2 billion with Black-owned businesses by 2025. To Target CEO Brian Cornell, these moves weren't just about values. They were good business. Speaking in 2023 on Fortune Magazine's Leadership Next podcast, Cornell said,
"The things we've done from a DE&I standpoint, it's adding value, it's helping us drive sales, it's building greater engagement with both our teams and our guests. And those are just the right things for our business today."
So when the company walked back its DEI commitments, the reversal felt especially stark.
Let's welcome Shaletta.
Target's announcement immediately sparked a boycott.
Which is why we have to make our voices heard now. Yeah. We have to create lasting change, and we have to stop shopping at Target.
Yeah. For Brundage, this isn't just about consumer choices. It's about accountability. She says if a company builds its brand and profits on the loyalty of Black communities, walking away from civil rights commitments isn't just disappointing, it's exploitative.
They benefit too much from Black dollars. They benefit too much from Black shoppers, Black creative workers who help them, you know, develop campaigns.
The boycott might just be working. Target's quarterly earnings report is due in early May, but their stock has been losing value for months, and recent reporting suggests in-store foot traffic is down as well. North Star Stories reached out to Target, who declined to comment. While some protesters are redirecting their spending to Costco, where shareholders recently reaffirmed support for DEI. Others, like Margaret Sullivan, are thinking even more locally.
Why would we put that money into another large, you know, corporation? Why don't we put that money into actual small businesses in our community?
Sullivan, an education lobbyist, started a Facebook boycott, a campaign encouraging people to intentionally support local Black-owned businesses.
Support can mean not only just buying something, but actually like promoting their services to other people.
For Sullivan, the goal is to build something more than a lasting boycott, something that strengthens the ecosystem for Black entrepreneurs.
You know, a part of it is obviously supporting them financially, but how do we also give them like professional development so they can grow and they can network and find more resources?
For North Star Stories, I'm Zan Holston.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Minnesota Department of Health is warning people in 10 Minnesota counties not to eat locally caught fish. The warning is due to high levels of PFAS, harmful man-made chemicals. MDH now recommends that everyone limit their consumption of locally caught fish, not just pregnant women or children. The chemicals can build up in the body and are linked to many health issues, especially for children. The contaminated fish are found in 6 metro counties and 4 in greater Minnesota. More information, including the counties affected, is online at health.state.mn.us.
In today's segment, how new logging orders will affect Minnesota's natural areas. Wildfire season is upon us, what the experts say you should know to be prepared. And construction is about to begin at one of the most photographed spots in the state. I'm Gracie J. A new federal order will not include plans for logging in the Boundary Waters Canoe area. That's according to an official from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. In early April, the Agriculture Secretary announced that logging can begin in more than 1 million acres of formerly protected wilderness areas. The order prompted immediate questions and concerns about the Boundary Waters. The federal administration says the order is to open up public lands in order to reduce dependence on foreign products. But as of now, it appears the Boundary Waters area is still protected. Next, as wildfire season begins in Minnesota, experts urge statewide caution and warn that conditions in the Northeast could make it one of the highest risk regions in the country. Reporter Maya Hecht has the story.
Wildfire behavior is impacted by 3 things. One is topography, one is weather, and one is fuels.
As Minnesota enters wildfire season, the Department of Natural Resources, or DNR, is working to mitigate risk before fires ignite.
In Minnesota, over 90% of wildfires are caused by people. I would say a majority of the time, it's unintentional. People are not meaning to cause a wildfire, but their fire escapes.
Karen Harrison is the wildfire prevention specialist for the Minnesota DNR.
The number one reason is when people are burning large piles of vegetation. Yeah, you know, I think people are often surprised, but we have wildfire activity across the whole state, including in metropolitan areas. You know, really anywhere where you have available fuel, you can have a wildfire.
According to Forester and FireWise community specialist Laura Murphy, the amount of yearly available fuel in Minnesota is increasing, especially in northeastern Minnesota, which she called a hotbed of potential.
It's actually one of the highest in the nation. A lot of that's just due to fuel loading of timber products.
Fuel loading is when combustible material, like dry dead trees and brush, accumulate in a forest.
We don't have the mills and the infrastructure that we historically had to get rid of lumber products. And right now we have the spruce budworm that's kind of decimating balsam fir in northeast Minnesota.
Spruce budworm is a native species that eats spruce and balsam fir. As the trees die, they dry out and become kindling.
It is native, but if we have warmer winters, it doesn't kill as many of them as it may have before.
Environmental experts say the severity of the outbreak is a consequence of human action, such as fire suppression and loss of forest diversity from logging. The result is more balsam fir in higher densities. Now, budworm numbers are higher than ever. Forest health specialists are hoping they're at their peak. According to Sherry Rovig, a firefighter and FireWise community leader,
the most dangerous period is the 5 to 8 years after that, when you've got all this dead material.
Wildfire prevention specialist Karen Harrison wants people to be aware and practice fire safety in their own communities.
I think it's really important for people to not get caught off guard because spring often brings these changing weather patterns. You know, on average, about 75% of wildfires occur in April and May. Those dry grasses and down leaves can dry out as quickly as 1 hour after precipitation ends. It might be, you know, perfect conditions in the morning and very high fire danger in the afternoon.
Fire danger and burn restriction maps are updated daily on the DNR's website. This is Maya Hecht for North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Split Rock Lighthouse will soon be more accessible and have enhanced features, but that also means visitors to the historic site won't be able to get inside the lighthouse itself during most of the month of May. Split Rock is located about an hour north of Duluth and is one of the state's most photographed landmarks. The upgrades will make pathways and ramps more accessible and extend the platform, giving visitors a better view of the lighthouse and the shores of Lake Superior. Guests are encouraged to visit the Split Rock website to see how construction might impact their visit.
In today's stories, a Northern college sees a future in competitive gaming, how organizations are keeping Pride events alive despite drastic funding cuts, and one of our sovereign nations announces a new leader. I'm Chantel Sims. Bemidji State University and Northwest Technical College are launching their first esports program. Esports is competitive video gaming. Project leaders say it's about more than gaming and that esports builds teamwork, critical thinking, and career-ready skills. School officials say the program will start as a club-level sport in 2026 with hopes of eventually becoming a varsity-level sport. The initiative is backed by Paul Bunyan Communications, which will support a new esports lounge on campus. The partnership reflects growing interest in esports and tech-driven education across northern Minnesota. Next, reporter Mick Finnegan talks to Pride Festival organizers around the state about their efforts to keep festivals running amid funding cuts.
Pride festivals around the state of Minnesota are preparing a little bit differently this year. From rural areas to the Twin Cities, the biggest concern is safety. Marshall Pride in Southwest Minnesota served around 1,000 community members last year. Their treasurer, Julie Walker, said they built the budget after November's election.
So we knew what we were facing. We increased our budget level by 10% this year to incorporate additional security concerns. So we're seeing a massive increase in the costs of what we're doing here.
Increased safety protocols call for an increased budget, but festivals nationwide are facing funding deficits this year. Many nonprofits, including Pride festivals, are seeing the negative effects on their funding due to the White House's efforts to end diversity, equity, and inclusion measures.
When permission is given from the highest office in the United States, particularly in relation to DEI issues, people feel emboldened to say hateful things louder than they would before.
Twin Cities Pride Executive Director Andy Otto discussed their robust safety plan due to the scale of the festival. They are taking extra precautions this year.
People don't realize that we're almost $300,000 into safety protocol around the park. Like, it's substantial. It's reaching out to our resources like Security and Mom Hugs and in all of those organizations to just kind of help be that barrier. I mean, it is a fine balance this year.
Andy has been a vocal advocate against DEI rollbacks and the impact it has on the queer community. Twin Cities Pride dropped Target from the festival sponsors after the corporation decided to end key DEI efforts.
I've been around Pride for 18 years and Target has been around for as long as I can remember. And we've worked through some things, but this one felt different.
Target is involved in many festivals around the state. Aaron Bombard from East Central Minnesota Pride in Pine City tells me their Pride is not primarily funded by corporate sponsors, but some do have a presence at the festival.
We've had to really navigate how we're going to align with them.
Small local businesses to large corporations are pledging or pulling their support. Andy Otto from Twin Cities Pride is just as concerned about the smaller festivals.
You know, we see a $200,000 gap and people think, wow, you know, that's a lot of money. Sometimes for a small festival, it's $1,000. And they're struggling to find those.
For some small festivals like East Central Minnesota Pride, organizer Natalie Goldman says it's too early to tell the full impact of these changes as they are still in the early rounds of corporate sponsorship outreach. However, many organizers have been heartwarmed by the outpouring of support they have gotten from local businesses and community members.
I think the community is showing up stronger because, you know, Target can pull their DEIs and The conservatives can have all of their executive orders, but we're not stopping. We're not going anywhere.
This is Mick Finnegan for North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Red Lake Nation Tribal Council has appointed a new hereditary chief. Mike Loud assumed the position, which has been open since Loud's brother, Chief Jim Loud, died in August last year. Chief Mike Loud spent nearly 40 years in Minneapolis serving as a community leader and activist. The Loud family members are descendants of Chief Crooked Arm, one of seven chiefs who negotiated the 1899 agreement with the United States that created the borders of the Red Lake Reservation. Hereditary chiefs serve as advisors and non-voting members of the Tribal Council, unlike the elected chief.
In today's broadcast, the generosity of a group of students makes a big impact on a local agency. It's never too early to check for cancer, as rates in Minnesota go up for some age groups, and help for those dealing with impact of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. I'm Gracie J. Students at Mayo High School in Rochester raised $20,000 for the Women's Shelter and Support Center. The effort is part of the school's annual Give One for All campaign that supports services for survivors of domestic violence. The action is part of a broader tradition of community giving among Rochester high schools. Since 2012, Mayo students have raised more than $200,000 for the organization. The shelter's executive director called the students' generosity a source of hope for survivors. Next, cancer rates in Minnesota are increasing in a particular age group. Reporter Britt Ahmet talks with a cancer epidemiologist about how early onset cancers are on the rise and for which populations.
Cancer rates are rising in young people in Minnesota and across the United States.
This is actually a trend that's happening even globally, kind of for different reasons than for in the United States.
Margie Brown is a cancer epidemiologist with the Minnesota Department of Health's State Cancer Registry.
Part of the global reason is that there's better reporting than there used to be in certain areas. But yeah, it is something we're watching. There's a lot of unknowns as to why this might be happening. And it really can vary by the age group, the types of cancers.
This group spans the ages of 15 to 39, which the MDH breaks down into three subgroups. It has noted increases in each of those.
Even within that age breakdown of 15 to 39, the cancers vary. So for like 15 to 19 year olds, the more common cancers that are diagnosed in that age group are thyroid cancer, Hodgkin lymphoma, brain and central nervous system tumors, and non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Whereas in the 20 to 29 year age group, again, we're seeing thyroid cancer. We also see testicular cancer, melanoma, and Hodgkin lymphoma. And in 30 to 39-year-olds, we see some breast cancer, again, thyroid cancer, melanoma, colorectal cancer, and testicular cancer for males.
Researchers are investigating potential causes of this uptick in early-onset cancers, things like obesity, alcohol consumption, inflammation, and environmental factors like microplastics. Tiny bits of plastic that break off from larger plastics. This happens every time you wash clothes that are made from synthetic fabrics, for example.
Scientists have found them in many parts of the body, even including the brain. One thing I think is important for people to know is that if you're microwaving your food, reheating it, it's best to do it in some type of a glass, not a plastic.
There are also more cervical cancer diagnoses in the 30 to 39 age group, with the mortality rate for females who are American Indian, Alaska Native, non-Hispanic, three times higher compared to all females in the state. Nationally, Minnesota ranks 11th in the number of HPV vaccines administered, with over 69% of youth ages 13 to 17 getting fully vaccinated.
And that's really important to point out because of the HPV vaccine. It really does protect almost entirely against cervical cancer. Like, there really should be nobody diagnosed with cervical cancer if they get the HPV vaccine. And it's not only cervical cancer, it's also protective for males, too.
For North Star Stories, this is Britt Ahmet.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Caring for someone with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, or FASD, is not easy.
That's why Proof Alliance is offering a free two-day conference in Brooklyn Center on May 15th and 16th. FASD is caused by alcohol use during pregnancy and affects 1 in 20 children in the U.S. It causes permanent brain-based disability, leading to challenges in behavior, learning, and social skills. The two-day conference offers help to those dealing with or caring for someone with FASD. Registration is online at proofalliance.org.
Today, a Northern Community College looks to the environment for new workforce initiatives. Then, some metro area organizations are providing vital information to vulnerable communities. And new rules on the road may have you checking your rearview mirrors more often. I'm Chantel Sings. White Earth Tribal and Community College is looking to tackle Northern Minnesota's skilled labor shortage. The effort includes investment in a new building on its Monoman campus and supporting clean energy initiatives. The facility will offer training in heating and cooling, plumbing, welding, construction, and renewable energy. The college is also launching energy auditor training to meet regional workforce needs in partnership with the Minnesota Commerce Department. Student leaders say the project could help keep Indigenous graduates in their communities. The college still has to raise some of the funding for the program. Coming up, as immigration enforcement increases, some Twin Cities-based organizations are increasing efforts to provide resources, information, and support to immigrant communities. Catherine Dizell has the story.
Last month, a Twin Cities-based organization held a training for community members on how to respond to immigration and customs enforcement, or ICE raids. Outside a St. Paul Recreation Center, a light rain started as attendees filed into the brownstone building. Organizers told members that they could not record or interview anyone during the training. Minnesota is home to roughly 500,000 immigrants. Mexican and Somali immigrants account for 100,000 of those. In response to the federal administration's escalated crackdown on immigration, local organizations like Unidos Minnesota have been training community members on what to do when they or neighbors are detained by ICE.
A lot of these organizers are holding two types of trainings around the state. And so we have our Know Your Rights trainings, Conoce Tus Derechos. Right now we have them in English and Spanish. And then the second is the raid response training.
Luis is the communications director of Unidos, an organization that focuses on immigration, the environment, and worker protections.
The raid response training allows for allies and accomplices to come into these spaces and find out about our raid response network, how they're able to plug in and become legal observers.
The Immigration Law Center of Minnesota, also based in the metro area, has been doing similar work.
We did immigration legal work in the first Trump administration, you know, and before, and then also after. And so we certainly have experience in working in a very hostile immigration climate.
That's Julia Decker, the policy director at Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota, a nonprofit organization that provides free immigration legal representation to low-income immigrants and refugees.
But of course, things are continuing to change very rapidly. And so in addition to the direct service, we are doing community education and trainings around knowing your rights, as well as just educating the general public about the immigration system.
Attendees of Unidos raid response trainings left with Know Your Rights booklets. The organization also partnered with Women's Press to publish a 28-page bilingual magazine with similar information. Luis says that having something in writing can be helpful.
It's a special edition on Know Your Rights. So there's information on how to navigate ICE encounters at home, in workplaces, checkpoints, and day-to-day things that you might need to know.
To read the Unidos Know Your Rights edition of Women's Press, visit womenspress.com. This is Catherine Dissel for North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Watch for motorcycles. Starting July 1st, Minnesota is legalizing lane splitting and lane filtering for motorcycles. Under the new law, riders will be allowed to split lanes or ride between two lanes of traffic as long as they don't go faster than 25 miles per hour or 15 miles per hour faster than surrounding vehicles. Riders will also be allowed to lane filter or move through stop traffic to get to the front of the pack. Drivers who intentionally block motorcyclists from filtering will be penalized. Minnesota became the sixth state to legalize lane splitting after Governor Walz signed the bill into law last year.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Down Portobello Road to the sound of reggae. I'm alive. The age of gold, yes, the age of old. The age of gold, the age of music's past. Hear them talk as I walk, as I hear them talk. I hear they say, expect the final blast. Walk down Portobello Road to the sound of reggae. I'm alive. I'm alive e vivo, muito vivo, vivo, vivo. Feel the sound of music banging in my belly, 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 belly. Know that one day I must die. I'm alive. And I know that one day I must die. I'm alive. Yes, I know that one day I must die. I'm alive. I'm alive e vivo, muito vivo, vivo, vivo. In the electric cinema or on the telly, 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 telly. 9 out of 10 movie stars make me cry. I'm alive. 9 out of 10 movie stars make me cry. I'm alive. 9 out of 10 movie stars make me cry. I'm alive. Make me cry, I'm alive. 9 out of 10 movie stars make me cry, I'm alive. Walk down Portobello Road to the sound of reggae, I'm alive. The age of gold, that's the age of old. The age of gold, the age of music's past. Hear them talk as I walk, as I hear them talk. I hear they say, expect the final blast. Walk down Portobello Road to the sound of reggae. I'm alive. I'm alive, e vivo, muito vivo, vivo, vivo. Feel the sound of music banging in my belly, 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 belly. Know that one day I must die. I'm alive. Know that one day. I'm alive. Yes, I knew that one day I must die. I'm alive. I'm alive e vivo, muito vivo, vivo, vivo. In the electric cinema or on the telly, 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 telly. 9 out of 10 movie stars make me cry. I'm alive. 9 out of 10 film stars make me cry. I'm alive. 9 out of 10 film stars make me cry. I'm alive. 9 out of 10 movie stars make me cry. I'm alive. 9 out of 10 movie stars make me cry. I'm alive. 9 out of 10 film stars make me cry. I'm alive. What about now?
Hello.